Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
Gave us earlier in the show from both Corbin and Jeff Hardy that it was looking like a retention from Styles. Now, I also thought that they gave up the goat on having Corbin interfere. Obviously, I was wrong there. I did feel that we got a suitable finish here because SmackDown wants to build around Styles right now as a strong champ, and I think that's a wise move, and they want to build up Riddle as a star to watch. So this isn't a new potential star losing and then cut immediately to the next segment. We're moving on. This is main event setting up his next angle right away. And even though they did have that Corbin angle earlier in the show, they had done a pretty sufficient job prior to that, making me think that Riddle's beef with Corbin had been completely dropped. So at least in that respect, it was a little bit of a surprise. But yeah, I think the big story is Riddle standing toe to toe with AJ Styles and seeming like his equal, and only losing the match because he just wasn't the better man for the matter of a mere 3 seconds.
Yeah, I agree. I think for the most part that worked for me. When we saw the Baron Corbin promo towards the beginning of the show, I kind of just was like, oh man, here we go. Like, they're going to put all this really good effective hype into the main event. And I thought you saw tonight AJ Styles talk about the match, Matt Riddle talk about the match, you had other stars on the show talk about it, and then Corbin cut that promo, and I'm just like, oh man, they're not going to really, you know, go to some kind of shenanigan finish with him that leaves things uncertain. I really wanted there to be a definitive winner to that match given the hype. And so I thought this worked nicely. And I also think the thing to remember, unfortunately, is that King Corbin, or Vince McMahon, is high on King Corbin, it seems. It feels like he's comfortable with him to put him in a role to take care of some of his most prized babyface possessions, Roman Reigns being one of them. So I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing. My concern on that other side of the coin would be, okay, has anybody that's been feuding with Baron Corbin come out better on the other side? So talk about the upcoming, what we're seems to be Corbin versus Riddle feud.
Yeah, it's difficult to argue with too much, but it does feel obligatory. I was recently joking with someone that I complained when Baron Corbin came in, and I was very high on him in NXT, and he had the obligatory Dolph Ziggler feud. And Ziggler was that guy that seemingly everybody coming up from NXT had to feud with for 3 months and get defined down with. And now, looking back, it seems all the more appropriate because that seems like the role that Corbin has inherited. So that is the disadvantage, that even though the framing of this for Riddle is better than it was looking like it was going to be with just yet another interference finish, it is still Corbin, who, yeah, I am higher on than most people, but I do recognize that he's basically the new Ziggler.
Yeah. What did you think of how they framed the Intercontinental Championship main event tonight? They had a couple things, or two main things, and I guess one of them is not a second karaoke, thank goodness. But, you know, you had Extreme Rules. This is like the go-home show for Extreme Rules. And then you had, you know, the IC title match between Styles and Matt Riddle, two, you know, pretty prominent events for one SmackDown. How do you think they did in building up Extreme Rules and the IC title match all, you know, in that 2 hour period?
Yeah, I WWE programming, it's been hit and miss. Raw was a bad example of this not working out, but with NXT and this instance of SmackDown, I think they've done a good job of promoting main events and causing you to look forward to them. Like Keith Lee versus Adam Cole, they had a bunch of video packages throughout the show of other wrestlers weighing in on who they thought was going to win. And of course we got that with Daniel Bryan and of course the interviews from Styles and Riddle themselves. throughout the show, but also at the very top of the show, along with a bunch of other stuff that we'll get to, of course. But I was particularly pleased with how they told you what was going to happen. So often it seems like the kayfabe sports federation that WWE is supposed to be goes into their shows without a plan, and they just hope that by putting all of these people in a building together that matches will end up happening. And we go through 3 hours of a show sometimes not knowing what our main event is about to be. So that worked. And for the Intercontinental title itself, they did a pretty good job with the tournament and with moving Styles over to SmackDown, and it just makes you hope that they are going to continue to elevate both Styles and the title with strong booking like this. And I think that this was another step in the right direction for that.
Yeah, no, and I agree. And I really liked the intro to tonight's show. You know, that you got this, like, that little rundown of really all the big hits. You had AJ Styles cut a promo at the beginning. You had Matt Riddle cut a promo at the beginning. They went to the New Day. And I thought that did a nice job of not only hyping the IC title match, because it did so right out of the gate, but it also, you know, it framed Extreme Rules as, like, I think as in a way that said – some things are going to happen on this show that are going to influence that card, and so I success for that. I'm not sure that it's something that can be played or done every week, as far as you might overkill that gimmick. But for tonight, I thought it worked well.
Yeah, the element of surprise is which is a phrase that, of course, AJ Styles used in that segment, so that's probably why that's on my mind. But the element of surprise is still important. You still want surprise. You still want to make it feel like you have to be watching, or else you're going to miss something. But I'm coming off of that Monday Night Raw that I referenced not being a good example of knowing what was going to happen on the show. And Raw has remained appointment television for me, not just because I tend to be on the Raw post shows sometimes with Wade, but not having that responsibility this week. I got half an hour into that show, and I thought, man, this is just more of the same. And apart from the main event, which honestly, if they had promoted it that earlier in the show, I missed it. And I, in the moment, completely forgot what the main event that I did want to see was going to be. And after just some stuff with MVP and Drew McIntyre and everything, acts that are going doing well, but it was just more of the same from them, I decided to tune out. I thought, you know, there are better things I can do with my evening, and I will catch up in a different way later. Sure, I was punished because then Shayna Baszler and Bianca Belair showed up on the show unannounced, and I do wish I had seen that when it happened. So take this example as you will, but that's where I was at as a viewer, and so I did really appreciate that segment. I agree, you probably can't do something like this every episode, but 5 minutes into the show, and I was like, all right, I know exactly what I'm going to get on this show, and it sounds good. I'm looking forward to it. Let's go.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, we got a lot of other stuff to get to, and callers waiting, so we'll let them define some of the topics. But Braun Strowman stuff, we got the quote-unquote Firefly Funhouse episode, New Day versus Cesaro and Nakamura hype, lots of other things, the Moment of Bliss, special announcement and special guest. So a lot there, but let's set the table first. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. We're talking the July 17th, 2020 edition of WWE SmackDown on Fox. I am not Wade Keller, though. I'm PW Torch columnist Zach Cadorn, filling in for Wade tonight while he's out on assignment. Wade will be recording his usual hotline for PW Torch VIP members tonight, breaking down the show top to bottom with usual analysis. So you can hear that as a VIP member, and you can go VIP at pwtorch.com/goVIP. The other voice you hear, though, is PW Torch contributor and host of the Torch's official NXT post show, PWT Talks NXT, Mr. Tom Staub. Tom, welcome in. Hope all is well.
Yeah, thanks for tapping me, Zach. This is a bit of a switcheroo, since, like I said, I am usually in the Raw post-show rotation, debuting in the SmackDown co-host chair tonight, so that hopefully will be sort of interesting. Indeed, PWT Talks NXT on Wednesday nights on the Daily Cast line. We go live 30 minutes after NXT. You can call us and you can email us, and I always put out the pertinents at Tom Staub on Twitter, at Tom Staub, T-O-M-S-T-O-U-P, and I realize now that I forgot to do this, but I meant to tweet a link to the trailer, the teaser trailer for a short film I'm working on. I spent most of my day sound editing it. If you're interested in seeing this guy taking some bumps, I do that as actor and director in this short film that I put together. So I won't dwell on that too much, but yeah, there's a table spot, so I'll tweet that out later. Oh, and of course, I would be remiss if I did not mention our new VIP show called NXT 8 Years Back. On Saturdays, Kelly Wells and myself are on the VIP exclusive podcast side of things, talking about the episode of NXT that aired 8 years back to that very date. We started at the first episode that took place at Full Sail Live, and we're talking about, I mean, shoot, on this most recent episode, so if you're listening to this live, it'll be tomorrow that the new episode drops. We're talking about people like Cesaro and Big E, people who are on SmackDown now. So it's a lot of fun.
Great. Yes. Definitely check that stuff out. I both shows highly recommend. And then thanks for being here, Tom. All right, the phone lines are open, so you can join us at 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Press 1 to make sure that you're officially in the host queue, and if you want to get on tonight and talk a little SmackDown. Tom, if you're ready, we'll take the first call of the night.
Okay, I had the Bruce Springsteen karaoke queued up here, but I guess we can go to calls.
Well, it depends. Which song did you have?
Darling County?
Oh, man, yes, gosh. A classic.
I've been practicing.
Very good. Oh, man, I wish I wouldn't have put that out into the universe. I feel like someone's going to hold me to that someday.
One of these days, when the pandemic's over, Zach, we'll do it.
All right, very good, very good. All right, starting things off, let's go to 443. 443, can you list your name and where you're calling from?
Hey, I'm Kyle from Buttermount. How are you doing?
Pretty good, Kyle. How are you? What did you think of SmackDown tonight?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, I thought overall it was really good. I enjoyed the with his tag team match. I thought that was good to me. That was really, really good, really good match. And it was cool. It was cool to see the you know, champions and challengers face each other off in a tag team match. I kind of like when you do that sometimes. It depends on who it is. But yeah, I just thought that match was really good. And then, you know, in my opinion too, you know, of course Sasha and Bayley have been on fire for all summer long. And again, with Becky's absence, they've been the most entertaining women on both brands. But it got me kind of worried when Shayna came back on Monday. I was like, oh no. It made me think of saying that because I had throughout the weeks, I was saying to myself that Sasha will win the championship because she's the most entertaining woman on both brands right now. But then when Shayna came back, it was like, they kind of messed with my head of like, oh, okay, wait a minute. So, but I don't know, but I just thought the match was good and looking forward to, you know, the title match on Sunday. But I hope Sasha had a stick. I hope he does because it'll be a little bit interesting. But if not, it'll be Bayley and Sasha on that SummerSlam. But either way, I think Sasha will win the championship, whether it's going to be on Sunday or on SummerSlam. But what do you think?
Yeah. Good question. I think this does feel like, in a way, either like the final ascent for Sasha Banks and Bayley to get to the tip top of everything in terms of them holding both majors women's titles in the WWE and the women's tag team titles, or it could signify the start of their, you know, what seems to be their impending feud. I thought the women's tag team match tonight was good. I thought Sasha and Bayley held down their end of the show like they have for the last few months. But Tom, I'll throw to you your thoughts on whether this is Sunday is going to be kind of like the finishing touches on, you know, Bayley and Sasha's dominance in the women's division, or the start of their downfall and inevitable feud together.
Well, I agree with you. The match was good. I will say that I kind of wish this had just remained a promo battle and maybe a bit of an angle, because I do care about the women's matches enough. They're definitely the matches on Sunday's card that I think have the most meaning and most implications, at least as far as what I look for in these wrestling shows. So I would rather have not given away some of the action that we will see on Sunday night. But that said, yes, good match. And I do agree with Kyle that it seemed like a tell when Baszler came back that Asuka probably will retain. But So that definitely flipped around the way I was thinking, because I was thinking this might be a wholesale changing of the guard in the golden role models. I finally remembered what they call themselves, where Sasha now has a title and Bayley doesn't. But I do still think that they can probably achieve a similar dynamic if Bayley does lose. I do think it's safe to predict at least one of those matches, the titles changing hands, or the title rather changing hands, and then you do get a new dynamic with Bayley not having that extra bragging chip on her shoulder, as it were. Although, you know, it is interesting enough. I also agree with Kyle that Sasha and Bayley have been excellent, which is a bit of a relief to say, because I dreaded talking about them before. These are two acts that I really like, and I just didn't. I felt like they were either treading water or just not being given much to work with. And they really have just found that lane recently of being people that it's that hard note to hit, where they are people that you want to see in action, but they are so annoying and aggravating that they still get over as heels and they still work as people that you want to see get beat up and lose. So if I'm wrong and nothing changes on Sunday night, I'm still okay with that heading into the next pay-per-view, because they have been entertaining enough that when they have their segments, my eyes are glued to the screen.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I thought that going into the show, I was looking at particularly that the SmackDown Women's Championship match as a feud and a match that needed a little extra heat, that needed a little extra oomph to get them over the hump. And I thought not only did Bayley provide it with her, you know, annoying shenanigans, on that side, but I thought Nikki Cross, her promo backstage to Alexa Bliss, it was kind of a different Nikki Cross, in one that's a little less confident and showed some weakness and a little doubt. But I thought she was able to show that within the confines of her character. Like, she really just let her guard down, like she would as energetic Nikki Cross. But in this instance, it was just a little more solemn, just with that doubt there. And I thought she, in that vein, with that opportunity, gave herself a mission, you know, put her credibility on the line, and also elevated the SmackDown Women's Championship in terms of it being very, very important to her, because this may be the only opportunity that she gets at it, like she said. So what did you think of Nikki Cross tonight in that promo and in the match?
Yeah, I'm totally with you. Nikki versus Bayley is always a match that I'm down for, because I viewed Nikki Cross as the potential successor to the ridiculous height of popularity that Bayley was at in NXT. And I do still feel she could have reached that, and she did have some good crescendos, but she never really had enough consistent TV time to truly achieve that in NXT. So I view them in that light together. They represented similar things for that brand. So I like seeing them go up against one another, because that's what goes through my mind. But the exact promo that you're talking about did bring this to a new level that made me anticipate it even more, because it's an odd thing to ask a title challenger to cut a promo expressing their doubt and anxiety over whether they can get it done at the big pay-per-view. But Nikki just seems – it's been her strength for a while now, the past couple months, I would say. It's probably a pretty agreeable position. I hear it a lot on these post shows, that she is just so genuine, and it feels like everything she's saying is truly coming from the actual person that Nikki Cross is, that it drew me in on a very personal level, for her. And yeah, just made me want to see her win, not just because I like what she represented to me in NXT, as a potential successor to Bayley, but just as the person she is now and what this would mean to her. It's definitely, I said I'm looking forward to both women's matches, but if you made me pick one, it would definitely be this one as the one I want to see for sure.
Kyle, anything else for us tonight?
I think everything else was good. I think the way they hyped up the Intercontinental match tonight was good too, you know, as you mentioned from before, for every match that happened, like with the New Day and the tag team division, stuff like that. I kind of figured it would be to a tables match because of what happened last week. So I figured it would add that match for Sunday, and so far it's the only stipulation match, I think. Well, that's what, in terms of the matches, I was going to say on Sunday, but But yeah, just I just enjoyed the new day in Cesaro and Shinsuke. I think that match could be fun too at Extreme Rules. I think Extreme Rules that would be a fun show, but yeah, that was it. Thanks for calling.
Okay, yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for making it. Tom, your take on the SmackDown tag team situation tonight, the tables match, and how they set this thing up on the go-home.
Yeah, I actually thought this was fine, and I know that's probably not the popular opinion, and it's representative of a lot of what – just the same old thing that WWE has been doing multiple times per week. The champions lose, the champions lose, and it just sets up feuds between losers. But as far as maybe this is just me being beaten over the head with that sort of booking for long enough that I'm starting to accept it. But, I thought in terms of just setting up what we know is going to be an undercard match on the show that will probably just represent the work rate part of the show, just to give, to add that to the variety of what Extreme Rules is going to offer. I thought this was a perfectly sufficient setup, a perfectly fine match between Cesaro and Big E. Again, in that sense, it was novel for me because, yes, again, these are two people that that Kelly and I are talking about on the VIP side of things as acts being developed 8 years ago on NXT. But, you know, just the actual setup of the stip, I mean, of course, they could have gotten more creative with it if this was a situation where they really wanted us to buy into this as a big match where we believed that the challengers could win. But I thought that Cesaro and Shinsuke being cheeky about it and picking the stipulation just because they already put the New Day through tables and it felt good, so they want to do it again, works for me. It's fine. We knew it was where they were going, which helped the cheekiness make the announcement more amusing. It was fine.
Yeah, I would. I think it was fine. It falls in the category of fine. I think if it's a higher a match on the card and something with a little more significance behind it, I think it probably deserves to get pulled apart in some in some areas. Like,
so for sure.
Why even after the tables angle last week, you got to wonder why even put in the cage match stipulation as an option?
Right.
Because it seemed ripe for a tables match. But like you said, there's going to be these kind of matches on the show, and I honestly think like with the talent in this match, you know, the New Day and Cesaro and Nakamura, like it's kind of a sleeper match for potentially something very good on the pay-per-view too. All right, we'll go to 708 next. 708, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hector from Chicago.
Can you say the name again? I missed it there.
Hector from Chicago.
Oh, Hector, yes. Hello, Hector, how are you? Thanks for the call. What do you think of SmackDown?
I thought it was good. I'm a little, like you guys, I'm glad Corbin didn't interfere in the match before it was over. So I'm happy that didn't happen. I love Asuka, but I was looking for something different as the mystery guest, like a Stephanie McMahon or someone returning. But I'm excited for Sunday. Like it was obvious with all the stuff between Sasha and Bayley that could happen, but tonight with Nikki, I feel like another story that they could branch off is Nikki going crazy after losing and going and turning on Bliss. Because, I mean, Bliss was always the one that people thought would turn. But now it's a chance that, like, Bliss gets turned on by Nikki and Nikki attacks her just from going crazy from losing. And then with Asuka, you have Kairi Sane who might be leaving. So, Raw Talk? They had a touching moment where Kairi wants to face Asuka before she leaves. So that's something that they might do. So I just feel like the SmackDown division or like the women's division in general, like there's so many branches that they could go to. Like there's so many different options, and I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is. And Tom, your take on a potential Nikki Cross heel turn?
That would be unexpected. I missed exactly that part of what Hector was suggesting. I suppose that would be turning on Alexa here. That would definitely be an unexpected route. Would not
certainly wouldn't want that to happen in the short term, perhaps in the long term, but Nikki's strength is absolutely as that bubbly, believable babyface who just loves everything that she's doing.
Yeah, man, not that she couldn't pull it off. I think she has the talent to certainly go that direction. But to me, Nikki Cross is a valuable piece to the SmackDown roster as a babyface. You know, she seems to be somebody right now who's simmering, and she's, you know, has a chance to win the championship. But even if she doesn't win the title this Sunday, she's still on the way up as a babyface. And I think, you know, if there were fans, and again, I can only look at this and guess, but I think if there were fans, they'd be behind her, because she has that passion and energy that's very engaging. And I don't know that you want to jump from that story quite yet just to turn her heel, because I think she is strong right now as a babyface. And to Hector's other point, Tom, the moment of bliss reveal, Asuka is the special guest. I don't know. I wouldn't say it was eye rolling, because it made sense given that Asuka is facing Sasha Banks for the Raw Women's Championship at Extreme Rules on Sunday. However, can she really be classified as a special guest is what I'll toss to you. And were you expecting something big?
Yes, I was expecting something bigger. And that's, of course, how it was framed in multiple ways. So in that regard, it might have felt like it might have been playing with fire a little bit. But as soon as Asuka came out, I had the same reaction. I just thought, oh, that makes perfect sense. Why didn't I think of that? Of course, they're going to work to build up that other match since Sasha's on SmackDown. But I was definitely of the mind of Hector thinking Stephanie, probably for an Evolution 2 announcement. Of course, at this point, it feels like saying that Stephanie's about to announce Evolution 2 feels like saying that John Cena's about to turn heel. But, the other thing was the way that Alexa was building it up and talking about the future made it seem to me like they were about to bring in an NXT call up. And I was thinking, ooh, who could that be? In his primer, Frank Pettiani suggested Mia Yim, which is a great pick. Maybe not on the go home show for a pay-per-view, but that's where it had my mind. So Asuka coming out. Yeah. I mean, of course, love Asuka. It was a logical move to make to build to the pay-per-view, but the framing it as a mystery guest, maybe not setting people up for disappointment.
Yeah, that was my take too. I think there's nothing wrong with having Asuka on a moment of bliss, but the mystery guest thing is just, it elevates expectations and it gets people talking in a good way, but to not pay it off with something truly special, it hurts your credibility to try to go that route when there's something that really is special that you're gonna reveal. This to me, after watching it, seemed like the perfect time to just promote the fact that Alexa Bliss had a great week and used her connections and got the Raw Women's Champion just to be on a moment of bliss. Like, to me, that's the easier sell, where you don't temper expectations, but you just kind of, you know, make them what it is and just make the segment, hey, this is going to be an avenue to build that match. And that's that, without any sort of additional hype. So yeah, not awful, but I like you, I was expecting either an NXT call up. And then as she was talking, Stephanie McMahon popped into my head too. Hector, anything else for us tonight?
One last thing, Morrison. Well, when was it, a few weeks ago or last week? He had that match with Riddle. Everyone enjoyed it. They were talking about, like, is there a chance Morrison moves up? And then this week he just gets destroyed by Strowman. So it's like they heard all the talk and then they were like, oh, let's just feed him to Strowman and end all that hope right away, because he just got taken out by Strowman easily after like a good showing against Riddle. But yeah, that was all. Thanks for taking the call and hope you guys have a good night.
Thank you, appreciate it, Hector. Yeah, John Morrison, he's an interesting topic. I kind of think after watching that Riddle match and tonight and really just everything else that he's done on SmackDown since he kind of returned to the company, I think we're I don't want to say that for sure we've seen his ceiling, but this kind of seems to me like it's going to be his role. Like, he's going to be the guy that they go to for comedy when they need it. He's going to be a guy that they go to if they need a really good match out of a up-and-comer or somebody that they're trying to frame as a big deal, like Matt Riddle. And he can do funny things and with The Miz. Like, I think he's kind of a well-rounded guy in that regard, but not somebody that the show is going to be built around. And I think because you see him in a lot of diverse segments in terms of what he's doing, it just puts me on a path of this is his lane, and I'm not sure that he's going to be leaving it anytime soon. Tom?
Yeah, as Morrison has been portrayed since his return, I do agree with you that this is where he's been slotted, and I haven't had a problem with that because I feel like Morrison is fine in those roles, and I personally don't feel like we're missing out on too much more that he could offer. I think he's just perfectly fine and found his slot in WWE. However, tonight changed my tune on that a little bit, and we'll see how it pans out. But they made a point of making sure to hang on his recovery in the ring. Of course, they brought out the backboard, and then he ended up being helped out in a very sympathy-drawing moment. Of course, this coming after what seems just like an innocent hey, hey, ho, ho, messing around thing earlier with The Miz refusing to have his back, even though, of course, The Miz was saying that he was going to have his back. So to me, it seems like they might be heading toward a John Morrison face turn. And this was just like, okay, we're going to turn him face. We may as well get the most out of him while he's still heel. So sure, put him up against Braun, feed him to Braun, because we're going to change his character alignment soon. So we can recoup that pretty easily.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. I think he's just going to be a utility guy, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I think when that calls for him to be, you know, in an upper tier match, like he was a couple weeks ago, he can do that. And then when it doesn't, he'll fall back down and do the hey, hey, ho, ho stuff with Miz.
Yep.
All right. Let's keep it going. Let's go to 541 next. 541, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Zach. It's Mark Fischetti, BFE from Portland, Oregon.
Hey, Mark. How you doing?
How you doing?
What do you think of SmackDown, man?
So just like I called in, gosh, I think it was a few days. I don't even remember what show I called in on. Oh, Raw. It was for Raw when I last called. So just like Raw, I was watching kind of peripherally while I was working. And I forget which one of you said it, but one of you compared Corbin to being the new Ziggler.
Yeah.
So
yes, yes, Tom did.
That the idea that Matt Riddle comes in and he has a match with John Morrison, and then he, you know, first he has a match with AJ Morrison, then AJ, and so tonight he gets beaten and defined down. So my first question, you know, it was interesting because earlier today WWE put up an Instagram post asking if Cesaro and Nakamura are the New Day's biggest threat ever. And it really got me thinking about how underutilized a lot of the talent are and how there's nobody for somebody like Riddle who should be ascending and not immediately defying down like he was tonight to have the ability to have those matches, to have, you know, the Eddie Guerreros, the Benoits, the Jerichos of the 90s, just for instance, you know, to have those matches, those career-defining matches where you really get to dive into your moveset, your character, your performance, and building your own personal brand. And having somebody to do that with is so important, having the right partner to dance with, so to speak, right? So, I mean, I guess my first question, I just had two, I think. You know, aside from the pandemic and loss of talent being off TV, what wrestlers are available if they were pushed correctly, like say a Nakamura and Cesaro? Because the only reason why Nakamura and Cesaro don't mean anything in today's environment is because of the way they were pushed, the way they've been utilized. And yet they could be those Benoit, Guerrero, Jericho type figures, even, you know, Kevin Owens. And I got to wonder, even before you answer this, you know, if these talent, you know, wished that they were alive or, you know, in their heyday, in their primes when Vince McMahon was in his prime, because they would have probably been utilized differently. But what wrestlers do you see that could be used on that level where they can, you know, help a Riddle showcase and be showcased themselves as well, so that, you know, lots of wrestlers are moving up the card at the same time?
Yeah, the guy that sticks out to me as somebody that can, that could do that if he had, and he's been a victim of an awful push for a while, but I think he still has, you know, the raw talent to do something, is Cesaro. You know, I think that guy can work in the ring mainly, and he can make anybody look good with any style, whether it's a Matt Riddle or, you know, somebody smaller like an AJ Styles, or even like, you know, somebody like a Keith Lee coming up one day and working with him. He's a guy that can really just morph any direction he needs to get his other opponents over. But I think he would just need to be framed differently for a long period of time, or a longish period of time before that, to make that really worthwhile. It's a tough question to answer, because you look up and down the roster at guys like Shinsuke Nakamura, and even Cesaro for that matter, even though he was my pick, and they're so defined in their roles that it's hard to see them stepping out, even in an effort to help other talent. Tom, your take?
Yeah, I think. I like where you're coming from, especially in terms of Matt Riddle, because I definitely view him as a guy that you could. I mean, it was not long ago that I was saying, and I suppose I could still. I don't know. Pandemic era changes things around, but it was not long ago that I was one of the many people saying that you could move this guy to Raw or SmackDown and have him main eventing the next WrestleMania. He's that kind of a talent. But, you know, using those examples like Jericho and Guerrero, not only do we have to remember that, you know, Jericho came in and sure, he had that bombastic entrance, but he treaded water for a year or so before really taking off. And that was, that was Vince booking him that certain way. And there are other examples that go against that as well. Even Guerrero, though, of course, we look back at the heights of his career the most, but his ceiling was as a mid-card guy for a long time. And of course, he excelled and we always noticed him, but he had that ceiling for quite a while. Now, I agree with you, Zach, with, you know, Cesaro is a name that comes to mind. And even though I think people like us would accept, like, okay, they're finally running with this guy, this is going to be good, it is still hard to imagine that because of the years and years and years of people like him just being utility players. And of course, Kevin Owens is a name that comes to mind as well. But I'll just go back to the one that I always say when questions like this arise, because I believe so strongly in him, and that is Adam Cole. And maybe that's missing the point of the question a little bit, since he has not been defined down, but he has not made that full main roster leap yet, despite being featured in the Survivor Series angle. But I just think that he's proven that he can play heel incredibly effectively. And even if he's cool, he's a guy that you're still going to want to see lose by the end of the match. He'll lean into the reaction that he gets in his entrance, because today's crowds, you're just going to get that reaction anyway. But then the way he works his matches, you still want to see him lose by the end. And even though we haven't seen it yet, I still strongly believe that Adam Cole is a guy who will be a Shawn Michaels level babyface, who garners sympathy like few others, and who, vice versa to what I said about him being a heel, who you will just desperately want to see win his matches. So yeah, that's a guy who, gosh, I just, you know, everybody brings up his height, but I just, I really hope that, you know, someone like Vince sees the strengths and just goes with it. But yeah, Riddle, I don't think I would push back on this being him defined down, like we said at the top of the show. I think he stood toe to toe with AJ, and even though he lost, I think it's important to keep AJ strong right now, and Riddle proved to be his equal tonight.
Yeah. Good point on Adam Cole. I think I agree. And really, you kind of look at that NXT core, you know, him, Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa. I think that mm-hmm. those two guys could also fall right in, almost verbatim with what you said about Cole, right into the in the same way, because they've all proven that they can work babyface, heel, good matches. Everything you said about Cole, I think, applies to them too. Mark, you said you had another question. What's your second one?
Just a quick follow-up. Cole, I absolutely agree, and I have the same worries about his size, height, and overall size. When he wrestled on SmackDown during the time when the wrestlers were stuck in Saudi Arabia, it was an interesting, I think, 2 weeks. I remember one of the weeks he wrestled Daniel Bryan and won. And he mm-hmm. looked great. He didn't have what I would call that Shawn Michaels-esque aura. But if Vince got behind him, and if is such a big word for two letters, I mean, it could be huge. You know, it's interesting. The idea of you talk about Matt Riddle being a game changer, like somebody who could be called up and then, you know, hot-shotted to the main event. Wade talked about that with Nakamura when he was on NXT. And I remember when Nakamura, I think it was WrestleMania weekend, he went against Sami Zayn on a takeover. I mean, the match, that match still impacts me because it was just, it was such a good match that really showcased them and what was possible. And everybody talks about how Nakamura is on his retirement tour. He's not motivated. Maybe he'll get motivated again when he goes back to Japan. But then you got to ask yourself, why isn't he motivated? You know, it again comes down to Vince and how he is. And when I say defining down, sometimes that could also mean, like in the case of Matt Riddle, there's a journey, there's a story to be told. And that whole journey was kind of cliff noted or summarized in 3 weeks. I feel like if there was more talent for him to play against, like a Cesaro, and by the way, the scenario that you proposed for Cesaro is exactly what they're doing with Dolph Ziggler right now with Drew McIntyre, and when they did that with Dolph Ziggler with AJ Styles at SummerSlam, and when they did that with Dolph Ziggler whenever. You know, they can do this. They can just decide to, you know, okay, let's just omit the past, forget the past. Let's try to give this person a fresh look. They do have that ability. They're not. I just had one more question. Yeah. It's not really anything of too much conversation, but Braun Strowman, you know, as I'm watching his match against John Morrison, I'm thinking to myself, you know, if there was a crowd there, if we weren't in the pandemic era, would he get booed out of the building? Is he that bad? Because to me, having him at the top, you talk about defining down, I feel like it defines down the whole SmackDown brand, because he's kind of an aimless leader. And I don't, there's nothing about him that's really connecting. So I'm just curious what you think about that. And that's all I had. Thanks, Pat.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Mark. Thanks for the call. Yeah, Braun Strowman is he's a guy with the Universal Championship that, if you went into the year thinking that, he probably wouldn't have been right. I mean, it didn't seem like the plan was for Braun Strowman to be carrying the SmackDown brand in 2020. But alas, here he is. And I don't know that I fully agree. I think he's a good or decent holdover champion given the situation. I think he's a guy that can be in this spot because of the fact that there isn't fans and because that, you know, he can just do what he needs to do out there, and that's that. There's no counter reaction to him. But you got to wonder, I think Mark brings up a good point, like how would that have yelling, that screaming promo that he did today, how would that have gone over in an arena full of fans? You know, I'm not a fan of the yelling promos. I know Wade talks a lot about it on the show, and I agree. I think there was some good content in those promos in terms of defining, like, hey, this is what this match means for me. This is why I need to win. I thought that was missing around the Swamp stipulation heading into tonight. So I'll check that box for them. But the delivery, though, I mean, you got to wonder what the impact of that would have been in front of, you know, 15,000 fans.
Yeah, I'll give tonight a pass for that exact reason, that it gave me the why as to why Braun is doing this match, and I felt like that is what I was specifically looking for going into tonight and looking at whatever they were going to do with Braun and Bray. To the specific question with Braun, I'm more on Mark's side that I think he would be getting booed quite heavily. I'm only looking at it through my eyes sitting on my couch, but I haven't been able to shake the concept that this guy wasn't booked on WrestleMania at all. And then without a storyline,
yeah.
You know, we understand the circumstances, but the fact is without a storyline, he just took over Roman's spot and just won the title. And even if I wanted to be giving him a chance, what I always remember about this Braun Strowman title run is the bit when they did sort of like the emergency news broadcast live from outside the PC with the Sheamus and Jeff Hardy DUI situation. And Braun Strowman was being interviewed and they said, well, Braun, what did you see? And his answer was, well, I was just showing up to work. And I'm like, this is your champion, ladies and gentlemen. He's just showing up to work. And that didn't strike me as, oh, he's a blue-collar hero. That struck me as he's just doing his job. And so he's not a hero that I want to cheer, even though they've souped up his entrance with, like, the CGI version of a train. What's that movie called? The Arrival of a Train from, like, 1896 or whatever it was that had people. I always think of that when that comes on the screen. I'm like, oh, yeah, over 100 years
ago. So the Strowman Express just isn't doing it for you, huh?
No. But I've got some more thoughts on Braun and Bray, but I don't want to kill them all. Yeah, it's just I suffice to say I'm optimistic about what the Swamp match could bring, but I think could be good for both guys on the other end of it. But right now, I don't think either are in great positions. But promo, even though it was not well delivered, was a step toward. It was a good step toward building the significance of this match on Sunday.
Very good. All right, let's keep it going. Let's go to 845. 845, please state your name and where you're calling from. 845, is that you? Going once, going twice. All right, we'll try in a little bit. All right, instead of 845. Let's go to 305. 305, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Zach. Hey, Tom. How's it going? Javier from Miami.
Hey, Javier. How you doing? What did you think of SmackDown?
A bit weird go-home show with spending so much time on stuff that's not really going to be playing into the horror show. But overall, I think it was fine. I usually agree with what you guys were saying about the whole yelling promos. I was actually fine with Strowman yelling in this case because it's just him, basically showing him becoming unhinged. And I do think that if they were, I think a lot of the stuff that they're doing now is obviously they're scripting with the idea that they don't have an actual real audience out there. So I think things would have definitely been different had, you know, the situation been, you know, different in that respect.
Yeah, I'm a little more lenient on that too for that reason. I think they needed to get this match to a point where, like, there was a reason for it to happen, and like they kind of talked around it a little bit in the hype up. Strowman referenced it in a couple promos, but I think we really needed to hear Strowman to say the purpose. Hey, I have to go back there to, you know, whatever, make sure the Fiend doesn't come back. Like I have to go back and win this, where it all started. And I think, you know, that even though he screamed to say it, I prefer just a regular talking promo that's a little more artistic and a little more just the flow's a little better. You know, I think the unhinged nature of him in this position going into that swamp, if you're going to do one, you know, that this probably is the time. Tom?
Yeah, and of course the elephant in the room is that the title is not on the line for what I believe is the second time in this feud, which just feels like yet another instance of them believing in the high concept character that is Bray Wyatt, but constantly cutting him off at the knees by oversimplifying him and not wanting to go all the way. So added to the fact that I still am not entirely clear why he is portraying this version of himself anyway. I guess it's just to get to Braun, but he was so far removed from it that I just didn't feel like there was a clean segue and explanation, and Bray's promos have just been his typical doublespeak that I'm sure, like I always say, I'm sure it means something to Wyndham Rotunda, but it's not important for WWE to actually get to the point of explaining what goes on in this guy's mind creatively. So yeah, again, just the Braun promo, I think, was the key that I was looking for. And you know, even though we criticize the delivery, I do at least recognize that he's trying to portray a man on the edge, that Bray Wyatt has succeeded in getting into his mind, and he's going a bit crazy, having his mind warped back to being a member of Bray's cult in the swamp and everything. So yeah, I still give it a pass despite the issues.
Javier, what else do you have for us tonight?
Yeah, I just think that this almost kind of feels like it's playing, the story's playing like at double speed almost. It could basically, I think it would have served it better if they had like spaced every single segment that we saw, like every other week, and then, you know, like have Mott be off TV or just do a little small something so you can see a slower descent into madness. Cause this almost feels like one day he was, Jack Nicholson in the beginning of The Shining, and then like the next episode he was, you know, at the end. So it just feels like that. That's why it feels like almost like a skip steps. It just feels like you're watching it. Like when you listen to a podcast at 2x speed, it's almost like how the story's been going. How do you think it turns out?
So go ahead, Javier.
Sorry.
No, go ahead, Tom.
I was going to say, I could imagine those the day of the week title screens. I think it's the one where Jack Nicholson is just totally zoning out in that one room that he spends most of his time in, that hall with the stairs, and it's just one the whole day is just one shot of him, and then boom, smash cut, Tuesday. It's just I'm just imagining that with Braun Strowman now.
How do you think it turns out? Because I could see it go both ways, where he overcomes and buries his past, leading to eventually to the feud with the Fiend. I think it'd be interesting. I mean, the timing is a little bit short, but again, everything seems to be going fast forward with him. I think it might be interesting if he ends up succumbing and then, you know, becoming a puppet for like a little bit until he has to break away. And then that leads to the feud with the Fiend.
Yeah, that I think that would be an interesting twist. I kind of think since in this promo, Braun Strowman really kind of put it all on the line. Like he really, you know, kind of laid it on thick in terms of what he's going to that swamp to do. And, you know, as the show's top babyface and as the universal champion, like I think he has to go in there and make good on that in order to remain strong. I don't know that you can go come off that promo with as strong winded as it was and as kind of firm as it was as to what he's going to do in that match and then lose. So going into tonight, I thought, okay, the Bray Wyatt's going to go over. That's how they're going to get to the third, the third title match, or actually the third match, but the first title match. But after hearing Strowman tonight, I kind of think you hit the nail on the head with what you first said, Javier. I think you get Strowman winning, and then the Fiend kind of comes back to haunt Strowman after the fact. Tom, what's your take?
I agree that it could work either way, but I believe the important thing here is what we talked about before with how Braun is, yes, theoretically in this case, translating to fans. And this is where I am very optimistic for the Swamp match, and I'll invoke the name of Jeremy Borash again. I believe that this is perfect subject matter for him to be in charge of. TBD whether it's him. We'll find out on Sunday. If you see the harsh backlighting and it looks like every single shot was taken from five different angles that he's cutting between, and he's using drone shots, which, saying that all out loud, it sounds terrible, but Borash makes it work. I think that we could be getting something the quality of the Undertaker-Styles cinematic match, which I think is easily arguable as still like the template that you want to be going for these. And no matter who wins, you can give Braun some really cool stunts to do that reminds people of his heyday when he was feuding with Roman and tipping stuff over. And I know there's only so much mileage you can get out of that, but that's when he was the most popular, when he was just destroying stuff. And I feel like you've got the perfect situation with the swamp fight to do something like that. And where do I think it goes? Yeah, you can put either guy over here and figure out a way to go to Braun Fiend at SummerSlam, whether it's Bray saying, okay, well, now I know what I need to do, or whether it's, well, I got my win and I got my win and now I want to go for the title. I think I would put Braun over here if it was my decision, but I do think this is leading either way to Braun versus Fiend at SummerSlam. And that's the one where we get the Otis cash in. And if I were to continue my fantasy booking, Otis would only hold it for a couple of weeks before the Fiend just destroys him. But the curiosity factor of tuning in to see what in the world WWE is doing with Otis with the belt would be a boon for ratings, I think. We could do some horror movie stuff with he and blank stuff. Mandy.
Yeah. And Tom, you got it all figured out over there, man. I love it.
I don't expect to be entirely right this time, but I do think that would be a fun direction.
Yeah, I think you're right. When the stretcher came out today, or the stretcher board anyway, I was like, oh man, it was a callback. I figured John Morrison on the stretcher was going to get launched up into that ceiling fan or something because
goodness,
it seemed dancing back in my head. But you're right. It is an opportunity for them to set up some stunts and feature Braun in that way again, because it did work all those years ago. Javier, anything else on SmackDown?
Last thing I got, I really liked the way they did the Riddle AJ Styles thing, because we got a clean finish, which I was totally not expecting, and it was clean finish. AJ Styles paid him respect, so it established kind of the pecking order, and then Corbin's the one, they saved the Corbin attack until afterwards. I really liked it, but I'm looking at the segment. I'm like, the WWE never does this. This is not the way that they do things. I mean, they would more likely just have Corbin just attack him in the middle of the match, and that way you don't have to give a victory. So I'm wondering if the reason that they gave AJ Styles a clean win over Riddle is how they like to sometimes give some wrestlers an attitude adjustment.
In what way? Expand on that.
Well, sometimes they'll have a wrestler lose, if they think that they're too arrogant or something like way back when Balor was destroyed by Kane, that was kind of like punishment for doing the whole too sweet thing with AJ Styles, I think it was. So he was destroyed. He was massacred by Kane. And every now and then they'll give somebody a clean win or a clean loss out of nowhere to so they know that, to be ready to let them know that, you're going to be doing jobs.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Sorry. I thought you meant attitude adjustment for AJ, but you mean for Riddle.
Yeah. For Riddle. Yeah. yeah. The one who lost.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that I didn't connect those dots first. Yeah, I mean, it certainly could be. You wouldn't put it past WWE to do something like that. And given the circumstances and all that's happened in the last couple of weeks, I don't know that it's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, it is just one loss on SmackDown. So if there's a real issue there that they've uncovered, that one loss probably isn't enough to put him in his place. But I think it is something to just tell him. I don't know. It could be a way of just saying, hey man, like, yeah, you're going to be a big star here, but that type of thing. And that, but just so he knows that's there. Tom, did you make anything of the booking of Riddle tonight outside of storyline?
No real new thoughts on it in that regard. I think it's one of those things where, because it is just one match in the moment, I don't want to try to make a mountain out of an invisible molehill, but there have been many cases where I have not done that, and then I've looked back and been like, oh, okay, yeah, that speculation was right, and we just needed to see it play out. But, you know, I continue to be sold on the fact that Riddle was a guy that they scouted for years. They knew what they were getting into with him, with the way he carries himself and his, you know, his genuine bro attitude, I guess you could say. And they knew what his style was. He was one of those guys where they were like, you know, before there was a major competitor that was also signing talent that they might be going after, he was the kind of guy where they were like, yeah, we could sign him now, but he's doing fine on the indies. Let's just let him develop doing what he's doing now, and we'll bring him in when the time is right. And so because they had such a long-term plan for Riddle, or such an eye for Riddle for as long as they did before actually signing him, I still remain optimistic that they know what they bought with his attitude and the way he approaches things. But yeah, Javier may be onto something.
Yeah. Javier, thanks very much. Always a pleasure talking to you, and I appreciate the call.
Well, and let me give you a quick plug. Currently working on the primer, and I am using your the stuff that you your post show notes to help me out with that. So. and Brandon's also. So
Excellent. Actually, you got quite a few primers dropping this weekend, don't you?
Oh hell, you don't know. I have no idea. Wade's been keeping busy. All right, guys, have a good night.
All right, man, have a good night. Thanks. All right, let's check back in with 845 to see if he's or she is ready to go. 845, please state your name and where you're calling from. You are on the air.
You know, 845, I agree. I do think Eric Rowan is going to show up during the swamp fight.
See, there you go. Great. We needed that call. All right, 845. We'll check in a little bit later. All right, let's go to a Skype call. It's been on hold for quite some time. If you hear the beep, that is you. Please state your name and where you are calling from.
Hey, it's Craig from Toledo.
Hey, Craig, how's it going? Thanks for calling. What did you think of SmackDown tonight?
It made me miss going to work. Like, I used to go to work and then watch the 90-minute Hulu version the next day and all that stuff. But I've been really down on the product lately. But I noticed something tonight that, I mean, I noticed these kind of like just these tiny little things, and I'm hoping that they develop into something. They usually don't, but I'm hoping this one does. The 5 years ago thing that Bailey mentioned, she's like, 5 years ago, the Evolution started, a women's Evolution. And I've noticed on social media they've been like saying it started 5 years ago, and they've been showing a lot of clips and stuff like that. Are they depicting the 5 years ago start of the women's Evolution to be when like the PCB and Team Bad and all that stuff happened? Is that the 5 years ago thing?
Yes, I believe so. I believe it was 5 years ago this summer where you had, you know, that there was that one Monday Night Raw where Sasha Banks, Charlotte, and Becky Lynch kind of made their debuts all at one time. It's funny because Bayley wasn't there for that, or Alexa Bliss, but it was those three.
That,
I think
that was
like
my
June or July 2015. Yeah, it's interesting for sure, and I think you can argue that the women's revolution started a little bit before that in NXT, and Tom, you'd be able to give some really good perspective on that. But yeah, the 5 years that they were talking about was that moment with Stephanie in the ring.
Yeah, and of course, you know, they've retroactively built a lot of it around Stephanie as well, and one of the clips that we've seen circulating on this 5 year anniversary of that is her backstage with them after the segment, and they're in tears, and she's saying, this is because of you, this is because of all your hard work, but the only person that we're looking at and listening to is Stephanie. And because it's been such a company thing, and they really are dredging it up a lot, It does seem eye-rolling, even to the point where, like, Shotzi Blackheart was wrestling Indy Hartwell on NXT, and one of the commentators said something like, well, clearly this women's evolution meant so much to her because she tweeted something about it this week. And I'm like, well, yeah, everybody did. There was clearly a company mandate to mention it on your Twitter feeds. But I will say that I do feel that even though this is a manufactured celebration, it is worth celebrating because even though, of course, I agree that and anybody who watched NXT at that time would, that the evolution started with people like Paige and Emma, and then it moved on to the, you know, what we regard as the four horsewomen of NXT. But it was those three and Bayley being left behind due to a combination of a wrist injury and the fact that NXT had become a brand and Triple H needed stars to build around. So he you know, needed somebody to stay behind. So that's why Bayley wasn't included. But those three coming up and being in that centerpiece of a segment that led to Charlotte Flair's then historic run with the Divas and then Women's Championship. I do think that that was really the galvanization of, yes, we are going with this. You know, as manufactured as a lot of it was and is, the fact is still there that they went with it. And I do feel like that really was signaling like, okay, We up here on the main roster, we recognize the awesome stuff that's going on down in NXT, and we are going to imbue that into the rest of our product, and we pledge to you that we will run with it. And it's been spotty ever since, but it's been a marked improvement over what it was prior.
Yeah, it has. I agree. Craig, what else do you have for us tonight?
And I didn't want to go all smarky on it. Like, I thought it was interesting that Bayley was the one that pointed it out, the 5 years thing, because she wasn't involved. I think that might be a storyline. I hope it is, because I think that'd be really cool. Like, for her to be like, oh, 5 years ago, huh? Well, I mean, me and Sasha kind of broke it down like a year before that at Brooklyn. And even if you want to go before that, I think the actual everything started with Charlotte and Talia, because I watched that match repeatedly, and it's just one of the most awesome matches ever. Sorry, I'm having trouble breathing nowadays. But for Bayley to bring it up, I'm wondering if that's a catalyst for the breakup, because if there is an Evolution 2 coming, that is going to be the marquee match, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if they get there, sure. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the interesting things about, I don't know, you call it a feud, but I guess the ongoing story between Bayley and Sasha Banks is that there's been, like, up to this point, just a lot of little nuanced stuff, like little looks here, looks there, Bayley putting Sasha Banks in matches and Sasha reacting to that. And I think you could file this under that category where, okay, they're just building a multitude of different elements and different cards that they can play when the two are finally embroiled in an actual feud together. And they've accumulated a lot of different angles that they can go to, including the one that you pointed out today, Craig. Tom, I mean, it depends on how quick they want to go with it. I mean, I think that this act, their duo, and I talked about this last week on the show, is an anchor of not of all WWE programming at this time, and it doesn't feel like it's ran its course yet. And so because of that and because of WWE being able to go to them, depending on when they decide to go with this match, I think you've got to weigh just how valuable they are on a week-to-week basis for the company and not pull the trigger too quick on it.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's what I'm struggling with, like we talked about at the top of the show, with the fact that, yeah, I think now switching the power dynamic and having Nikki Cross win on Sunday would be an interesting way forward. But at the same time, I am enjoying them, even in what could very easily become overexposure across all three brands. I still look forward to seeing them now. So, yeah, there definitely is that risk. But if they do go for it, I love Craig, I love your idea. You look at something like what they're doing, the pros and cons of what they're doing with Braun and Bray, and Braun being being the black sheep of the Wyatt family, that's a storyline that I never viewed as important. I never bought into it. I thought that was even as Braun has continued to be a prominent member of the roster, I still view that run with the Wyatt family as his weakest, and he felt like he was just brought in as an obligation. It was like, oh, here's just the next token big guy that's supposed to be scary, and he was still green at the time and everything. So anyway, all that aside, that's why I when they're trying to play on that history, I want to give them points because it's like, okay, at least they're not forgetting that history and they're trying to build a story out of it. But with Braun and Bray, it doesn't work for me personally because that storyline never meant anything to me. So I have trouble buying that it has the gravity that we're supposed to believe it has. And I say all that to illustrate the opposite with the potential for that being the story with Bailey and Sasha. I too noticed that Bailey brought it up after they had already shown the video package that did not include her in that segment. I viewed it as definitely a heelish thing. Like, the audience is supposed to notice that she's not involved, but she's also trying to take credit for it. Meanwhile, the person standing behind her and being her hype woman was one of those people. So, yeah, I think that's my long-winded way of saying that I think that would be a really compelling angle to be the catalyst for the split.
It's not in WWE's DNA. It's not in their DNA to pay it that type of booking off, it's not that it's not in them, but they just don't go that route enough for my liking. So if they use this, like, I want to look back and major props, because I think it's a real nuanced, you know, angle that, you know, you don't have to completely shine the light on it right away, but when it comes time, I think it'll really make the feud extra personal for both Banks and Bailey. Craig, sorry, you were talking there.
I'm sorry.
No worries.
I absolutely, like, I've listened to those Pritchard podcasts. I don't listen to all of them because they're so damn long. But, like, he worships that Macho Man Hogan slow build, take the time, do this thing, and that's the one thing that mattered. And even if everything else fades off, if he has that one thing that matters, and this could be that one thing that matters to him. So him being in charge of both shows, I think that might be like what he might be trying for, and I'm all in for that. I'd love to see it because
yeah, you read my mind. I was thinking of that exact angle as well.
Yeah, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we know that Bailey worships Macho Man for whatever that's worth.
Good point. Craig, thanks very much for the call, man. I appreciate it. Great to talk to you, as always.
You guys have a good night.
Be well, man.
917, we'll go to you. 917, please state your name and where you are calling from. 917, are you there? It is a Friday night. Lots of sleepy folk. All right, we'll put you back on mute, and we will go to 714. 714, please state your name and where you're calling from. Oh, dear. 0-2. All right, the last chance, 714, state your name and where you're calling from. Okay, well, you know what? We'll leave it at that. And we'll end the caller portion here. Thank you very much to all the callers. Appreciate it. Appreciate the insight. Appreciate the feedback. We will move to the mailbag here right now.